hey, have you ever had a great idea and you just want to tell everyone about it, but you're running into a couple problems? Like, one, how do I tell everyone about my great idea? Or even, how do I even get this podcast off the ground? Let me tell you, I was in the same boat as you, kid. And honestly, Anchor is the one that helped me out. Anchor is your one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors, so you can get paid for the podcast you put out. So if you've always wanted to start a podcast and tell the world about this great idea of yours, go to anchor.fm/start and join me and the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor. That's anchor.fm/start, and I can't wait to hear your podcast.
I can't think of a really cool intro, or I can't even say intro correctly. Roll the music. I can't. Oh, today's date is July 18th, 2018. I can't.
We're on episode. Content.
we're on episode four. Five? I don't know. It's four. Just a really...
You always have a
really
problem with this. It's number four.
I can never keep my numbers in order, and we're only on the fourth episode.
Is that why you failed math twice in college?
No kidding. I only failed it once, fun fact.
Oh, right. Wasn't it philosophy?
No, philosophy is what I... No, philosophy I failed once and then passed. And then I took a math called Math Designer with one of the professors. I'm not going to just point out names, but I didn't do well in that. I got a D in that, and I was like, she's like, you could do better. And I was like, no, I can't. I don't do well at math, period. I don't math. So here we are. And holy tamale, it's warm in my room. I have a pizza, so I am going to leave at some point, and I'm really afraid for what Ben's going to say.
I'll just ramble for a minute.
That's cool. Ben, it's you, and here we are.
It's you. It's us.
I know I'm a mess today. I got home late. I don't have anything opened that pertains to this show at all. No notes are open. Now they are. Oh, long week. I had 3 days off. It was wonderful. I slept like a child on Friday. Saturday did work. Sunday did more work, and then went back to school Monday. So here we are, Ben. We're at our show. We're at here. This is where we're at.
Yep.
How's your week? What's going on?
My week consists of reading books and playing Pokemon Go. So.
Oh my word. What level are you on Pokemon Go?
29, but expect me to be 30 in the next 2 days.
All right. I'm on, I think, as I load it, I'm level 12. Ow, I feel. I remember when Pokemon was so big, they like started kicking people out, or they started inviting people in, and I remember that huge hype. I'll tell my kids that one day and be like, did you ever play the game Pokemon Go? And they'll be like, Dad, that's a really old game. I'll be like, no, that was a lit time. And then I'll dab, and they'll be like, get out.
I'll be like, get out right now.
yeah, Pokemon Go was a time. I don't know. It's weird. Pokemon Go is like, I don't know.
We'll make an episode on that.
Make an episode on Pokemon Go. The rise and fall. You know what? When Fortnite starts to fade out, which it's starting to, I feel like it's starting to fade out.
That's only because you don't like season 5.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't get me wrong. Fortnite has a lot of great things. It's on every stinking platform. It's crossplay, except for Sony, because Sony's stupid. So, RIP Sony. And it's free. Like, it covers every single base it needs to. If every game did that, every gamer would, like, be happy. Like, you wouldn't hear a really lot of complaints. You'd be complaining about how the game is, or the dynamics of the game, not whether or not you can play it. Agreed? Disagree?
I don't know what you said.
Like, okay, if... Name me a game. Like, if... I can't use Elder Scrolls. I'm trying to think of, like, a multiplayer. Like, if... we'll do Battlefield. So Battlefield, it plays on every system.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot play. You cannot play against other people on different systems. There's no crossplay.
So if I'm playing, actually,
yeah, unless Xbox and PlayStation have worked something out, or I could be completely wrong. But a lot of games don't crossplay, and I think that's ridiculous. I think if every game was crossplay and every game was free, but now they're doing that whole like subscription. Xbox has their subscription thing where you subscribe for like X amount of dollars a month. I think it's like 15 or 12 or 10 or some number like that. And you can play any game you want for free. Origin, I think, has the same thing. Or EA does.
Battlefield 1, you can do crossplay.
Can I do it on the new one? Battlefield 5, which I'll be playing the crap out of in streaming?
If they don't add it, I don't see... Yeah, they probably do.
That's, well, maybe they do. I don't know. You can tell how much I stay up on games. I had you send me a list of games I should play.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to look at this list.
These are the ones that I consider some of the best for you that I also liked from the first five pages of Steam. The top games on Steam.
Oh yeah, Rainbow Six, Stardew Valley? Did I say that right?
Stardew Valley.
Yeah.
Mirror's Edge, Subnautica.
I've played Doom. I was not a huge Doom fan. The Witcher, I've seen that. I've heard that's good. I don't know. I'm thinking of getting... I'm really just thinking if I just bought Battlefield like 4 or like 1 and just played it. I might be playing a crap of it as soon as 5 comes out. I don't know.
It's like, do you spend $100 now or $100 in October when it launches?
Seriously. Like, that's where I feel like where we're at for me. It's like,
what do you play until Battlefield 1
comes
out?
Well, it's weird because, like, I'm a huge Bethesda fan. Like, when Starfield comes out, ooh, I'm so excited. Oh, my heart just gets all excited when I hear Starfield. Elder Scrolls 6 will come out eventually whenever it does. Not for a few years, but whatever. Fallout 76, I will probably play. Don't know if I'll love it, but I'll play it. I wasn't a big fan of Fallout 3. Big fan of Fallout 4. Yeah. First-person shooters, like the Call of Duty series, the campaign, not the multiplayer. Big fan of Battlefield multiplayer, not
the
campaign.
I have friends who, when you say that Fallout is a first-person shooter, would probably want to kill you because...
No, well, it's... No, I'm sorry.
Fallout 1, 2, 3.
True. Fallout's not a first-person shooter. Fallout is a RPG. Like, I know that.
But they will say that Fallout 4 is closer to a first-person than an RPG.
Yeah. Fallout 4 is, like, building. Because they did that whole building thing, and it had a lot of potential, and it just wasn't that great.
Well, welcome to Fallout 76.
I know, and I'm really excited for Fallout 76 and their building. I'm real excited on. Is it still an RPG, though, or what is it?
When you find out, let me know. It's so not survival, according to them. They'll probably deny it being a first-person shooter, although that it's got tons of those elements. And most people will say it's not an RPG. So it's something that's so much of a mix. It's like... like America.
Just a good old melting pot.
A hint of racism. Anyways...
Ben, there are things you just shouldn't say out loud, and that might be one of... I was going to tell you what this woman told me today. So this woman... So in Home Depot, we have 3 vending machines, and they just remodeled the break room area. So it's like 2 large, like, French door refrigerators, a full kitchen, like, really nice chairs and couches and seating. Like, it's a really nice break room. And the vending machines have... those like swipe cards, so like the tap to pay. Oh, that's my Google Home going off telling me I have pizza. And so they have like the tap to pay, or like you can swipe your debit card or credit card and, you know, get something out of a vending machine instead of paying cash. And I like pull my phone out, and there's like 4 or 5 people there, and this one woman, and I'm not gonna mention her by name, but she's real annoying, and I'm not a fan of her. And I go up there and I pull out my Apple Pay, and I, you know, tap and pay with Apple, and get my, you know, water. And the lady's like, did you just pay with that on your phone? And I was like, yeah. She's like, how? And I was like, it's called Apple Pay. I was like, it's just real simple. All my debit cards and credit cards are on my phone, and I just, you know, use my fingerprint and scan, and boom, bam, done. It takes like less than 5 seconds. And she's like, that's so cool. I wish I had that. And I was like, well, what phone do you have? And she's like, oh, I have a Samsung 8. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, so you could use Samsung Pay. It's literally the same thing. And she's like, oh, that's what that is? And I was just like, yeah. And she's like, oh, I don't like that. That's dumb. And I was like, what? She's like, I wish I had that feature, but I don't like Samsung Pay. And I was like, huh? I was like, okay. And she's like, yeah, I wish I had that. And I was like, you do. It's called Samsung Pay. No, I don't want that. Okay, ma'am, you cannot say you love something and want something and then say you hate it at the same time. That's not how that works. You get one or the other choice. You don't get both.
And it's like, it's not like Samsung Pay is your only option. Like,
no, you have
PayPal
Android Pay,
has
you
an option. Android Pay.
Visa.
Yeah.
Visa has an option. I was like, there's so many options.
Yeah.
Which one's better? I don't know. They're all basically the same thing. Which one's more secure? I don't know. Samsung.
They're
I know
secured
Apple has
the same way, so even that doesn't matter.
Oh, okay. Well, that, yeah, double doesn't matter. I was just like, woman, you don't get to say you love something and want it, and then when I tell you how to get it, be like, oh, I don't want it that way. There's no other way to do it. Like,
it's like saying, I wish I had a car, and then you give them a Ford, and you're like, eh, I don't want a Ford.
Or no, that's like saying you want a pickup, and they say, okay, well, this is the pickup, and this is how you do it with your phone and like everything. And they're like, oh, I don't want that. And you're like, that's not how that works. Like, you can't say something you want it. I tell you how to get it and then say, oh, I don't want that. Like, you wanted it. I gave it to you. I gave you the option on how to get it. And does that make sense? Like, am I making sense? Am I, like, losing my mind and not making sense? Because that makes sense in my head.
It makes some degrees of sense. Sure, they may not like the app specifically. They just want the feature.
Well, no, she doesn't.
Like,
no, she doesn't like. Well, when I said it, I was like, "Yeah, your phone." She's like, "Oh, that's not secure." And I was like, "Lady, I've had Apple Pay on my phone since for at least over 2 years. Apple Pay came out when?"
The thing is, paying with your phone is way more secure than having a debit card with the RFID tag that you can just tap onto it the same way you would with your phone, because there's credit cards, debit cards that have that.
I'll be right back.
And that is always active, so you're just walking around with an RFID tag in your pocket. And my boss actually did a research paper on sniffing for those tags. He can detect your RFID tag on your credit card in your pocket from 150 feet. And he can tell when other people are doing it, which is what he was actually researching. So just having it always active, always on your credit card, is way less secure than just tapping with your phone, having to use your fingerprint, and it's only active for 15 seconds.
Okay, I'm back. I just realized I can't eat my pizza while doing this podcast. So my pizza's just kind of sitting next to me. So, yeah, that's going to be real tempting. What were we talking about again? Something with Apple Pay?
We were talking about the first episode topic.
Oh, that's, isn't that web design?
Yes. So this episode is dedicated to web design.
Right. So we're actually, that's a little funny thing too. So we're, now that we're putting, Ben and I are trying to put a little bit more effort into this podcast. I mean, we were putting effort in, but we want some direction in this.
We're putting pre-effort in.
Yeah, a little bit more pre-effort. More, a little bit more on my end. Ben kind of put some in. I have to put a lot more in. Because when school year starts, this is going to drastically change as far as like the ability to record and get this out on time. So we normally record on Wednesdays and then upload on Friday. We're now going to have to record like any day of the week and then upload on Friday. So we're kind of doing, the whole point of this program is to talk about design in a lot of different form factors, from different YouTube creators to the idea of streaming, how to build like a network and build a community, other like ideas like that. And so we're kind of starting out a little easy. We're going to talk about web design, you know, Do you need a website? Who deserves a website? And Ben, I'm going to kind of let you kind of break into this. So, websites. Who needs them? Like, who do you think, how do you figure out if you need a website?
Well, we touched on this last time when I brought up the question to Paul. Do you have a website? Do you want a website? And he said, no, everything I do is on social media. And that got me thinking, well, who needs a website in this day and age? Because you have a service like Behance that is kind of a digital portfolio.
Bless you.
So Behance is like a digital portfolio, and there's Facebook where you post your own stuff. There's Twitter where you can promote your business, what you're actually doing, try and get people through there, give updates. There's so many different types of social media. Who actually needs a website? So I think the only people right. who need a website these days are businesses where they can have a dedicated place laid out in the style and the form that they need to suit their needs, or people who have a large amount of stuff, maybe not necessarily people who have like just info, because that could go on like a wiki, like a community wiki, but people who have like how they did this, what they do for the, even those can go to blogs. I don't know. It's very hard to say in this day and age, you need a website.
No, I agree. I think, you have people, like individual people. So I'm going to use, there's difference between personal and business. And in a personal situation, so let's use Paul again as an example. Paul's a creator. Paul makes videos. He makes content. He makes videos, podcasts. That's what he makes.
Yeah.
Does he need a personal website? I don't know. Paul, what are you offering to the table? Now, if you're someone like, we're going to use Peter McKinnon. You know, 2 million subscribers, real big on YouTube, has a really big following, but he's very into photography. So if he offered himself as a photographer, like as a private photographer to you can hire to do your wedding, to do your, you know, photos, whatever, thing like that, you know, then yeah, it makes sense for him because he's running a business behind himself, mm-hmm. but himself is the business. You know, he is the personal brand.
But then you would promote your social medias before you would promote your own website. Your website is like the final, it's your storefront these days.
Correct. Where, you know, in his social media, you know, he might have a pinned post for his Twitter saying, like, you know, a lot of people when they do Lutz packages, they'll pin that, or their merch store, they'll pin that on their Twitter. Mm-hmm. Just because, like, you know, when I tell people, like I said, go follow me on Twitter, which you definitely should, at Joshua Sicanary. It's where I pretty much stay up to date on pretty much everything, and I'm always on there. So if you have questions on anything, like, just DM me. Or even on my Discord, you know, same thing. I'm always on those two big platforms. Do I personally need a website? No. Do I offer a service? Not yet. I would love to. And that's still in working stages right now, real basic. But will I create a website? No. Now, going from social media and YouTube and that kind of sort of thing to, let's just say, architecture, does mm-hmm. the architect firm need a website? Absolutely, because it's a business. Now, does an individual architect, like, let's say, yourself or a professor, need a website? Maybe. Maybe you do.
These
in
days,
a sense of showing... Go ahead.
These days, like, even portfolios... Like, people say, yeah, put your portfolio online. But then, is Wix even, like, a real website? Is that just another form of social media where you just plug in your own information and then people find it? But, like, even portfolios, you can find, like I said, websites like Behance where you can put your design portfolio there and people can just access it whenever. So yeah, I agree. Even personal architects don't need one these days.
I agree. And it's funny too, because like if you do, let's do a professor at NDSU. So Mike Christensen is a professor at NDSU that teaches architecture. He also has his own business. Does he need a website? Yes. His company needs a website to showcase their work, but also he can showcase his work as an individual architect and as for all of his papers that he writes, you know, that shows all of his papers. So you can go to these papers and look at them and see the research behind it. I think that's totally an awesome idea. It's real. Like you have to sit down with yourself and have that conversation with yourself. Who needs a website? Do I need a website? Do I not need a website? And if I do, what kind of website do I need? And that's kind of leading into, you know, two different design styles of websites that are different, but they're very similar in the same. And Ben, you know a little bit more about this. You've done a little bit more research on this. And I remember one was UI and I don't remember the other one.
Yeah, UI and UX. So these are just acronyms for user interface and user experience. User experience is more, you analyze the website, you analyze how things flow, how people get from here to there. Is this button being red driving people away? Do we get more clicks through on this website if we change it to green? Things like that. Where UI is saying, does this button look right? Does this entire page look the same? Does it look uniform? That's the more design right. aspect.
Now, when looking into design, and that's UI, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it's more of the cosmetics.
Interface.
Yeah. There's a lot of great opportunities and there are a lot of great sources to help you build a website in that sense. You have stuff like Squarespace, you have stuff like Wix, you have stuff like Adobe has their own website building. Well, isn't that Muse, if I remember correctly? Adobe Muse?
It was.
What is it now?
They're no longer supporting that because they're going on to other bigger and better projects.
Okay, but you can still use Muse, correct?
You can still use it, just I don't know why you would.
Okay, but like there's different, Squarespace is pretty much the really big one that I know.
Yeah, Squarespace and Wix.
Yeah, and you know those have a lot of great opportunities and a lot of great resources and a lot of just really awesome features for building a website. And I really like the way Squarespace does theirs, just with it. This isn't sponsored anyway, but Squarespace, hey, if you want to sponsor this, it'd be awesome. Just hit me up in the DMs.
I was considering like starting this whole episode with like, and no, a word from our sponsor.
And this,
no, please don't click away.
And brought to you by Squarespace. They have over 40 million.
Let's not get into legal action.
I know. But no, I think you know, you need, if you're building a design, really like there's a lot of options. Do a little bit of research. Look it over. Your designs can always change. Your websites can always change. They're not like stamped final, you know, documents. They're able to
adapt.
You can
change what it looks like.
You can change your bio. You can change your photo. You can change, you know, what's pinned, but that's about it.
Yeah.
And same thing with like a blog post. Like you can kind of change that, but not really. I mean, there's some flexibility to it.
Which I think is a big part of why people would want a website is you can control the entire medium. You can control what it looks like, how people interact with it, how it feels.
Yeah, I agree. I think, and you know, the design of your website reflects you hugely. So, I mean, if you're doing, I'm just going to give some examples. If you're doing a very, like a cooking, like if you're a baker, you know, you want your website to reflect that. So you want it to be bright. You want it to be a little colorful, but simple. You want, you know, displays of food, really nice shots, real professional shots done. And, you know, you want it to represent the, you know, the business of what you're doing. If it's a personal website, again, it can still be a very white, clean, you know, thing. You just want your website to reflect the way you are. You know, mm-hmm. you're not going to sell. I'm going to use like Hot Topic as an example. Hot Topic is a very, it's a clothing store. So, but it's when you go to their store, it's very dark, it's low lights. So you want the website to kind of reflect that in that sense. So, you know, am I making sense?
Yeah, like you wouldn't get the same feel if you went to YouTube and watched some videos from them.
Right. Now, if your website has the ability to do dark mode, always do dark mode.
Please.
Always.
Just add a dark
always
mode.
Add a dark mode.
Whenever I find a program that doesn't have dark mode, I scream internally and then get on with my life with a different program.
It's funny, too, because not a lot of people know YouTube has a dark mode. And every time I see people have YouTube...
Added it.
Well, they have it on the app and they have it on the desktop. So I love it when I go on people's phones and they're on like not a dark mode. And I'm like, why are you not on dark mode? And they're like, what's that? And I'm like, this. And I tap it and they're like, oh my word. And they're like, their head explodes and like, they're like, ah. I'm like, yeah, you're welcome. I just blew your mind. What's up?
So, well, do they have an actual dark mode or is it just incognito?
No, they have a dark mode. Like, if I pull up YouTube right now, boom, dark mode. It's right in. You click on yourself, you go down to, and it's literally right there. Dark theme on, and you can turn on or off. Best thing they have ever done. Twitter has a dark mode as well on the mobile app. I don't know if they have it on their website. I don't think they do. But I know on the mobile app there's a dark mode. They've had that for a while, though.
See, now I'm ticked because I don't have that option as an Android.
Really?
I'm not seeing it yet. I'm looking. Well,
now, iPhones don't have a dark mode theme, but the new Mac software, Mojave, has a dark mode, and that's great. But iOS 12 doesn't, and a lot of people, it takes them off. It takes me off. They have smart inverts, which is kind of close. It's getting better every year, but it's not the best thing ever. It works great in like Apple apps, but the second I go to another app, it does not work.
Mm-hmm.
So like even like a lot of people ask me when they pull up my phone, I have Safari. So when I open Safari, it's in a dark mode, but it's really just in incognito mode or private mode. Yeah. And I leave it in private mode for that reason. Everyone's like, oh, you leave your phone in private mode because you want them to read your history. And I was like, no, I literally leave it because it's basically a dark mode. So, yeah. Duh. Plus, I don't. You can go look through my history. I don't care. Go for it. All you're going to find is Amazon websites and random Google searches of things Ben sends me. That's a lot of things, for the record. I'll wake up every morning and Ben will send me like 2 or 3 links and I'll be like
at like 8 a.m. before you've even opened it.
Yeah, seriously. And I'll be up at like 9:30 and Ben will be, I'll look and I'm like, what's this? And he'll be like, oh, it's da 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 da, and I'll get like a 25-minute like read of text and I'm like, oh, all right, cool, thanks. And he's like, you could have just read it. And I was like, I could have, but it was easier if you just typed it and explained it to me. I know. Okay, so going back to websites, there's different styles, or there's one style in particular you were talking about. We were talking about earlier last week.
Yeah, I noticed it quite a while ago, actually, that it intrigued me, but it's called, let me open the outline again. It's called Brutalist Websites. So, Brutalism,
We're talking about architecture, Brutalist architecture?
No, Brutalism... I mean, it's based off of that. Brutalism first appeared in architecture, where it was the raw concrete buildings. They're mainly associated with like poor people housing. But I mean, that's not what it was originally for.
No,
it's just how it evolved.
Right, and Brutalist architecture is a really interesting style. It's very. It's like it's a brutal like design. It's very like harsh on the eyes. It's not pretty, but it is. It's kind of cool in the right context and in the right design.
Yeah.
Literally, if you just do a Google search of brutalist architecture, you're gonna see a bunch of concrete buildings, and they're very harsh. It's a very hard. I mean, it sounds like what you think it does,
Yeah.
But I like...
But they're also really cool in, like, their own way.
Yeah, like, Brutal's architecture is a very unique design, and it can look really cool. Like, it looks like a concrete jungle gym, because that's what its intention is to look for. And it's not in everyone's... It's just really cool to look at.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of big, like, big cities have a lot of Brutal's architecture. You'll see it, and you'll be like, oh, that's Brutalism. It looks like prison, but it's not prison. That's like when someone tried to ask me like what Brutalist architecture is, and I was like, think of a prison but really cool, and they're like, are there inmates? And I was like, well, no, it's like a library. Like, there's one architect that built a Brutalist like library, and I was like, ooh. And it's like glass and like concrete pillars. Oh yeah, do a Google search, you'll be kind of impressed with what you see. It's very interesting. So the fact to take a very raw design style like that and put it into a website is really interesting. And I have links, and I'll link those down below in the show notes.
Yep.
Brutalist
websites is getting down to the core of what a website it is. Most of the time, it's getting rid of all of the formatting of a website. It's getting rid of all of this JavaScript and ad pop-ups and hover over things and windows pop up and, oh my god, I don't know what's happening. It gets rid of all of that. It's
right.
What you see is what you get, WYSIWYG. So you put an image on it, there's an image there. You put text on it, there's text there.
Right. And web design has come a long way as well. I mean,
oh yeah.
I mean, before you had to like what code and everything to make it look great and HTML and.
Yeah, I mean, with things like Squarespace, that almost makes it obsolete, but doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
What was it? Twitch has for their panels, they have a real basic style of HTML, and I had to like remember HTML when I like learned it. Like three or 4 years ago, and I learned like real basic stuff. Nothing like I had to refer back
just
to textbooks.
Just a few tags here and there.
And I was like, oh man, I was like, I don't remember this. And then I'm like, oh gosh, this is kind of hard. And like to do links within like a word, it was like real difficult. And I was like,
Ahref, yep.
Yep. And then like, well, they did it's called Markdown, is what they do. So it's parentheses of like what the link will look like, the word that you click on will be, and then you do brackets, and then you put your link in there, and then when you hit save and submit, it automatically formats it and then puts it the way you want it. So then like when I have it says like YouTube, and you click on it and it like sends you to YouTube and blah blah blah. And yeah, so Brutalist websites is interesting. It's a very raw, like, what you see is what you get. There's no pretty design, but it is pretty in a sense. It's interesting.
It definitely, if you do it right, like, sure, there's some where, like, there's even...
it's simple, but it's not.
There's one website that was done in a Brutalist theme that was meant to mock Brutalist websites. And yet I think that the way they did it showed the power of a Brutalist website at the exact same time. And I'll put that link down there too.
Yeah, it's an interesting style. And then you have tiny websites no server.
So for most people, when they want their own website, they have to go buy a domain from a big hosting company, buy a server to host it on. The domain will cost you, you know, maybe $10 for the domain, and then you have to renew it every month or something. The server is where the big bucks come. What tiny websites are is they were developed. Let me open this link so I can remember his name. But he was Amazon Lambda. Blah, blah, blah.
And not having a server, like, this removes you needing a server, correct?
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to get a full-fledged Twitter on this. Or at least, to the people who actually do this, oh my goodness. But you're not going to get a full Twitter on it. What it is you can put basic HTML on it, and that's it. And it stores all of that in the URL. So if you go to itty.bitty.site, you can create your own HTML website on it and then share that link, and anybody with that link will get that website. It's immutable. Once you send that link, that's the link. And what it does, it just compresses all of that data for the HTML, and even the compression's cool because it's like, you know, binary, ones and zeros.
Right.
They change it to, I think, so that's base 2. I'm pretty sure what they change it to is base 64. Okay. So that goes through 1 through 24. No, oh, sorry, 1 through 10. And then it's like 1F, 2F, 3F, 4F, all the way up to 64.
Right. Okay.
So it just goes from like ones and zeros to, well, now I can say onomatopoeia with ALVX.
Right.
Or it's something a, like
it's
that.
It's like an easy hack, but it's not easy because you got to know HTML.
You just got to compress it. And so they just compress all of that data into a very short string of text, put that text in the URL, and every time that text is detected, it just basically uncompresses it, and you get the same website every time.
Right. No, go ahead.
So I'll put an itty bitty site I made in the description below. But is every time you open it, you're going to get the exact same thing.
Yeah. You're no kidding. Yeah. Wait. Oh, that's mean. Oh, that's mean. I just am now looking at your website. That's mean.
I'll put a different one. That was a test one.
It's the thing. It says, "Dear Joshua, you're a dork, Ben."
He never looks at my links, so it's like the chance that he'd actually look at it was super low.
I'm looking at all your links because I'm trying to be more. I want to make sure what I'm talking about is not dumb, but at the end of the day, like, my opinion's usually dumb, so who knows. So to wrap this all up, I mean, the first question you need to ask yourself is, do you need a website? And if you do, okay, we need a website. How do you want to go about that? There's really easy options like we've talked about. There's Squarespace, there's Wix, there's things with Adobe that you can do. Again, I wouldn't highly recommend it, but it is an option, with Creative Cloud. And you know, those are really simple options. And then there's different styles. You know, you have, you know, the Brutalist, you have, you know, real simple, clean websites. And look at different websites. You know, the one thing that I really like about Apple, it's probably my favorite thing about them, is their website when they release new products. Because to scroll through it, it's an experience to scroll through Apple's website. I mean, it's something really cool. It is just interesting how they do it. You know, the way they walk you through a phone on a website, it's just very interesting. Or how they walked through, I remember when the new MacBook or the Mac Pro came out, the trash can, and they would actually like disassemble it. And yeah, you can actually still walk through it. And as you scroll, it'll actually disassemble the MacBook Pro or the Mac Pro and walk you through each part, what it is and all of it. So again, there's different styles and different, just the website is an experience for a user to do, and you kind of want to hook them when being on there. Wouldn't you agree, disagree with me, Ben?
As a final topic on product design for next week, the new Mac Pro laptops.
Oh, do you want to talk about a little bit of tech before we end the show?
No, this is just like a hook on to next time where we'll do the next episode's going to be product design. But the new MacBooks, the whole scandal with the keyboard.
I thought you might bring this up with the third generation of Butterfly keyboard.
Yeah, they just added a little tiny rubber gasket as a dust shield, and they solved the problem. We'll see. We'll see.
We'll see. If you want to know what our thoughts are, tune in next week. And with that being said, I still don't know how to close these out, but my name's Josh.
And I'm Ben.
And this is a Designer's Exchange. Bye, everyone.